You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Boy, you feeling the burn, Ron?
Well, I felt the burn. I listened to Bernie Sanders' town hall on Fox. I had to listen to it because, Linda, I'm part of the working class. I had to work. So I listened to it when I was driving back to the ranch. Pretty interesting.
I only got to listen to part of it because I also am part of the working class, and I had to also work. And I had to do grocery shopping as well because you need to eat.
Well, what do you think? Okay, what do you think about all the subjects that came up? First of all, I thought the moderators on Fox did a great job.
You know what? I thought that they did a great job, and such a difference from what we see from CNN hammering on our Republican candidates. Just a dramatic difference to my mind. They were respectful. Everybody was respectful. And actually, Bernie, from what little outtakes I saw, he looked like he was having a great time. But as I sat and listened, I thought, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that either. Nope, don't agree with that either.
Well, I was listening to it, and not only did I not agree with it, but just some of the things that he was saying about our economy and President Trump and job creation was just a lot of malarkey. I guess they have a lot of academic freedom when they're on television, but what I did like, and you don't see this very often, is I saw, first of all, Martha McCollum, right?
Martha McCollum.
And Bret Baier, mm-hmm. who both of these people are extremely intelligent and well-spoken and well-read. They gave him lots of room to talk about anything that he wanted to talk about, answering all the questions from the audience. But I thought what was good is they also held him accountable, especially Martha. Whenever he said something that was against what the known facts were, Martha took him on, and I thought she did so in a very professional way. But you know, I will piggyback on something that you said. He sounded extremely confident, like this is his moment, and he knows this is his moment, and he better capitalize on that.
Well, I think that he's the front runner right now out of the gazillion or so Democrats that are running. But, you know, there are some things that I really need to differ with him with. And one of the things, I mean, probably at least three main things. So one of the first things that struck me was when he talked about President Trump and he called him a liar. And I really take offense to that. First of all, I grew up hating that word and I still hate it. I think that's a despicable word. But what he said was that President Trump can't tell the truth about anything. And he gave an example of saying that President Trump saying that his dad was born in Germany when everybody knows he was born in New York. I don't know. I never heard one way or the other. So, and I don't really care either. But this mantra that the left has about calling President Trump a liar on everything, I just don't see that to be true. Is he bombastic? Yes. Is he petty sometimes? Yep. But I don't see him as a constant liar. I just don't. And what I do see that he doesn't get enough credit for is that he's absolutely in the corner of the American people.
Let me ask you a question. What do you think is worse, being called a liar or being called a hypocrite? And what I mean, what do you, not just being called it, what do you think is worse, being a liar or being a hypocrite, or are those words synonymous?
No, they're not synonymous. And to me, being a liar is worse than being a hypocrite. Being a liar is just completely being dishonest, although being a hypocrite is being dishonest in another way, for sure.
Well, let me bring this up, because to me, there's so many things about Bernie Sanders and also the new progressive left that I find hypocritical. And the border issue is probably the biggest one. Okay, he was a person that has been quoted time and time again of denying that there was a crisis at the border. All of a sudden, and you may have missed this, but I caught it on the radio, and that is he said, we have a serious problem at the border. So what changed? You know, I mean, we've had, you know, tens of thousands of people coming across our border every single month for the last couple of years. Okay. And so there wasn't a border problem before. And then all of a sudden in the last 2 or 3 weeks, since the last time you said there was no border problem and it was, what did they say, manufactured, all of a sudden now we have a serious problem at the border. What changed, Bernie?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Did anybody ask him that?
Well, I don't think they did, at least maybe not the parts that I heard. But then again, let's talk about some of the things that he did speak about. And again, I don't want to take disadvantage of you or advantage of you, but one of the things that he talked about is his tax the rich and tax corporate America program. Did you catch that part?
Well, I did. And that's something that you don't even have to listen to a town hall. He speaks about it all the time. He definitely wants a tax raise, and he definitely wants to tax the rich at a much higher rate. And is interesting because I did hear the portion of the town hall where, you know, he had released his taxes and he and his wife made something like $550,000. And
just on his book?
No, $133,000 was his salary as a senator.
Okay.
And the rest, $300,000+, was from his book. So Martha McCallum brought up that, well, he's more than welcome to write the government a check for those additional taxes that he feels that the rich should pay. And he said, no, he's not paying any additional taxes. He paid his fair share. So, there's your hypocrisy right there, in that if you believe that the government deserves more money because you make more money, why won't you do that?
Well, his whole program about tax the rich and tax corporate America and give your fair share is really interesting, because there's two opinions of fair share as far as, you know, Bernie Sanders is concerned. Fair share number one is what he thinks your fair share is. Fair share number two is what he thinks his fair share is.
Well,
you get
that's,
it?
That's,
and guess what? Yeah. His fair share is a heck of a lot less than our fair share.
Yeah. Well, that's always the way that it is with them. And by the way, I mean, here's a guy who, you know, gets somebody to drive him around, and he's got three houses, he's doing really good.
Yeah,
they get all the perks, they get the special health care benefits. I'd like to know if he's going to go on his own health care that he's suggesting for everybody else. But before I get to health care, because that's a big deal to me, is, you know, he's saying that the system is skewed for the top 1%. And I am so tired of hearing that. What are you talking about, the top 1%? Are you saying that 99% of the people in this country are deprived in some way? Are they deprived of opportunity? Are they deprived of jobs? Are they deprived of incomes? Because guess what? There are 900,000 open jobs that we don't even have enough people to fill in this country.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And I mean, we could talk all day long about the reasons for that were probably created more than 30 years ago, when they started taking all the shop classes and all of those things out of the high schools, and were literally forcing people to go into college, telling people that, listen, if you don't go to college and get that 4-year degree, you're just going to be ending up doing menial labor, meaning you're going to be in the trades. Well, the trades, as you and I know, because we use the trades all the time to do work for us, they're making a pretty damn good income.
Well, okay? They are. And you know, everybody's panacea in life is not the same. Some people are better with their hands. Some people are better with their minds. Some people are better with numbers. Some people are better with computers. Some people are better with plumbing, cars, whatever it is. I was actually talking just today to my hairdresser, and she's a smart, smart gal. Could she be doing more than hair? Yes. Do you know why she does hair?
No.
She loves it. She loves it. That is her passion. So she that is what makes her happy in life, which is ultimately what people should be doing, right?
Well, no, I absolutely agree with you. Look, what's the name of the guy that is on that did Home Improvement? Oh no, the Dirtiest Jobs, right? What's the name?
Mike Rowe.
Oh my God, I love him. He talks all about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I would like to talk about Mike Rowe, but I want to finish with Bernie because Bernie has one burning issue for me.
Okay, and I'm going to let you, and I apologize because I took you off course there for a minute.
That's okay. I'm very focused. is the health care. So Bernie wants to take away everybody's health care and give them his version of Medicare, Medi-Cal, whatever. Government-run program. What Bernie says, Ron, that absolutely drives me up the wall is he says that healthcare is a right. It is not
a privilege.
It's not. Yeah. It's a right. So let me go further with that because here's why this upsets me. If healthcare is a right, who is to administer that healthcare? Are we going to force people to take medical classes and become doctors? Because nobody's going to want to be a doctor in a healthcare system that is what Bernie is promoting here.
You know, in one of our coffee conversations not too long ago, you shared with me the fact that you went to go see the doctor and you had a very minor medical procedure done. And I think it cost about, you saw the bill.
It was like $345.
Right. And the doctor, his end of it was only 10 bucks.
Right.
From Medicare. I couldn't believe that.
Right. So why would you go to school and pay hundreds of thousands of doctors to be a physician?
Right.
And have to work for all these people that you don't have a choice of whether you want to work for them or not. I mean, the thing about being an American and being an entrepreneur and being a doctor, let's face it, is being an entrepreneur.
Oh, you're definitely a businessman if you're a doctor.
So you have done all of this work and you've spent all of this time and you have all of this mental capability because not everybody can be a doctor. And now you're going to work for a pittance for everybody in the country. So your office is going to be so completely full all of the time that nobody's going to get good health care. And the government is going to determine what health care you can give. Who will want to be a doctor? And on top of that, you will have to do scads of paperwork for the government every time that you see somebody.
That you are not going to get paid for.
Right. But you'll have to pay your employees for.
That's exactly right.
So let's be real. This whole thing sounds great. Sounds great. Everybody free healthcare. It's a right. I'm sorry. It is not a right. You cannot force people to be doctors. You cannot force them to be good doctors. You cannot tell me as an American person that I cannot have a procedure that is going to better my life or save my life or give me a better quality of life because you don't want to pay for it. This is the most wrong thing. If nothing else, Bernie Sanders cannot get elected because of that, because he will destroy our humanity as we know it in this country.
Well, you know, even with the Obama, you know, care system, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which is just an albatross around our necks. Look at what happened with that program and the ridiculous increases in the, what do you call it, Linda? They'll just say the costs.
Yeah, in the costs. Okay, the costs. Cost.
And then look how few people were able to get the type of health care that they had been promised, which was, you know, you can use your own doctor. If you want to use your own doctor, you can use your own doctor. You know, that one just stuck in me.
Yeah.
You know, and then some of the health care costs in that program were just astronomical and nobody could afford it. And then, you know, you and I have discussed, you know, being older and being, you know, having Medicare, that we can't find doctors in Texas that want to take our Medicare. And we've paid into that system our entire lives. Let me just leave one more thing. And that is what Bernie just kind of skirted the issue, but Martha McCollum hit him up on it. Do you want, under your system, are people going to have to give up their corporate health care? And he kind of moved around it, but she locked in on him like a laser beam. And he admitted, yeah, you're going to have to get rid of that.
Right. He said that.
But it's for the benefit of all that you're giving it up.
Right. And he also used some false figures about how many people in the country don't have medical insurance, or he makes it sound as though, oh, they can't get medical insurance. Well, no, that's not the case, because everybody can get medical insurance thanks to Obama. But there are a lot of people, Ron, who choose not to have it. And now he's taking that option away from them too. So it's not that healthcare is a right, but now you don't have the right to choose your own healthcare, your own doctor, your own way of handling your health, which is a most private and personal issue.
And whether or not you want to have health care. Okay, because they're forcing you to have health care.
Well, they're not forcing you to have health care.
Oh, sure they are. Well, sure they are. They're going to charge you.
No, they're going to pay. You're going to be paying for all of the people that can't pay. And who knows how many of those people they're going to determine will get it free, while the people that make more money pay for it all.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me go back over to the Obamacare system. And that was, they forced you to do it because you'd have to pay something like $2,600 a year to opt out. Don't you remember that?
Yeah, I think it was even more than that. But yes, you did have to pay that.
Right.
And President Trump took that away. This is the worst nightmare that will ever befall American citizens. And by the way, speaking of American citizens, his plan includes all the illegal aliens. So whether they're working or not, we can all pay for them to have health care also, because after all, it's a human right to have health care. But I go back to, it is not a human obligation for somebody to be a doctor. Where are you going to find health care providers to handle these masses?
No, you know, you've raised an absolutely excellent point. And I mean, I just think about, you know, our administrative assistant, Vinny, over in Los Angeles, that, you know, went to USC and put himself through school, and his, you know, his mom and dad helped him too. I think they've spent about $400,000 in his education. Now, he's going to be a phenomenal doctor, just like he was a phenomenal employee for us. But I'll tell you what, if he was to take the Medicare clients, right, patients, he with the charges, or, you know, the money that you were saying your doctor got, he'd be in the hole, because he couldn't even pay the interest rate on the student loans that got him into medical school. Hey, how about our first cup of coffee?
Great, I'll make it.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
A little bit more about Bernie Sanders and his refusing to give up his extra money to pay the wealth tax, right? One of the things that he asked Martha McCallum was, well, why don't you pay it? And she says, I'm not the one who, you know,
brought it up.
Yeah, who said that everybody else should pay it.
I'm hanging on to my money.
Yeah, but you are. And apparently Bernie's hanging on to his money too. But when Bret Baier pointed out to him that, well, isn't that just the capitalistic system here that you are, you know, saying is so bad? I mean, aren't you just participating in that system that you say is so bad? And, you know, there was this pause, and he said, well, no, he's not going to apologize for having written a successful book, but what he wants is a country in which everyone has an opportunity. He said a lot of people don't have a college degree. A lot of people are not United States senators. And here's a couple of points about that. Everybody has opportunity. Okay.
Everybody has an opportunity to get a college degree, and everybody has an opportunity to become not only a senator, but a president of the United
States.
Absolutely.
You have that opportunity. It's what you do with your life that determines that. It's not that there's no opportunity. So that's another hypocritical statement, because he's a guy who didn't come up in a wealthy family, and look at him. But anyway, to his point about the college education, everybody can get a college education. Well, or he said everybody can't get a college education, which is probably true because of the cost of college nowadays.
Well, okay, the cost of college is certainly one major component of it. But the other thing is you have to qualify to get to college. Okay, you have to have an SAT score. You've got to have the grades to qualify to get into college, because the vast, vast, vast majority of colleges and universities that I'm familiar with have admittance requirements.
Well, and I'd also like to point out that the vast, vast, vast majority of colleges and universities are run by left-wing Democrats.
Oh, there's
and
no
progressives.
Doubt about it. There's
so
no doubt about it.
The fact that college tuition has risen faster than any other thing that you can possibly mention, whether it be healthcare or groceries
or
housing or energy or anything else, it has risen faster and gone higher. And we are saddling our students with huge amounts of debt to get in college. And Mike Rowe, you remember Mike Rowe?
Yeah, sure.
The Dirty Jobs guy.
Dirty Jobs guy. And he just wrote a book. And the name of the book is The Way I Heard It.
Right. And I think it's not even quite on the market yet, but he's out talking about it. And what's interesting, and I really agree with him, is that he's talking about how much the price of college has risen. And I think he's been listening to Talking While Married, because he says what we say. Everybody shouldn't go to college. College is not for everybody. And even more now, with a lot of the ridiculous classes on the agendas of the colleges, we are not teaching our students in a way that puts them out into the workforce as useful, productive people. Where do people get the education mostly to work in a place is from working in the place, is from other people working in a place, right? It's not from college, because what college teaches, in my opinion, for the most part, unless you are, say, a doctor or a
In the technical trades,
exactly.
Engineering, architecture,
right.
Things like that.
Everything else in my book, as an employer, you can keep.
I'll tell you what, and I told this to one of our sons, all right, who went in and got his bachelor's degree, and you know, he's in law enforcement, and I said, why, you know, he got an AS, right, Associate of Science degree. In police science. And I said, that's fine. And he says, I'm going to get my bachelor's degree. And I said to him, why are you going to get your bachelor's degree? What can you do with a bachelor's degree in law enforcement that you can't do with a, you know, with an AS degree? And he says, well, I want to do more like what you do. And I said, okay. And next thing I know, a few years later, well, I want to get a master's degree. And I said to him, well, wait a minute. Why do you want to get a master's degree? You know, we kept playing this game back and forth, and I'm just kind of testing him. But he paid, I think, an online, right, National University, which is a great accredited university. I was a professor there for years in forensic science. I think he paid $15,000 for his bachelor degree, and then he's going to pay somewhere between $15,000 and $30,000 for his master's degree. And I'm going, geez, Brian, I mean, unless you're doing something extremely technical like forensics, like I do, you don't need to have that master's, or you're going to teach, you don't need to have that master's degree. It is the push that they get from these universities and from these, you know, professors and things that just want them to go keep going back and getting degrees, and it's just not necessary.
Well, I don't think it's necessary, and it's interesting because I just hired a young man, and he does not have any kind of college degree. He came out of high school and worked at a few places, and You know, it's interesting because he talked to me about that. And I said, you know what? A college degree is not all that to me. What I want is that you have common sense, that you can think to the next logical step in a puzzle, and, you know, that you make things happen, that you're ethical, that you're consistent, that you work hard, that
self-initiated, motivated, right?
All those
get things. To work on time.
Yeah, and by the way, he does all of that. So I don't think that the college degree does everything, but the point is, Bernie is indicating that people don't have opportunity, and they do have opportunity, but those are not opportunities that I believe that everybody should take. There are scads of wealthy entrepreneurs without college degrees.
Absolutely. You know, Linda, do you feel that when, you know, Bernie Sanders talks about, you know, free college for everybody, do you feel that he looks at college and college education as an entitlement,
where they're
that these kids, no matter what their background, meaning how smart are they, and, you know, what types of prerequisite, you know, learning skills do you have or that you're missing, regardless of any of that, does he believe that? And I'm asking you for your opinion, obviously, but do you think he believes that free college is an entitlement?
Well, he absolutely believes in that. And, it, you know, this is along the same lines as the medical with me. You know, there are laws of unintended consequences to all of these things. So let's just say that everybody gets into college now, right? Everybody can go to college. So people are going to waste a lot of their life and their time going to college. Worse than that, they're going to waste the time and the education of people that really should go to college, that really have the smarts and the capability. So what would be the next logical step? Next logical step is that they dumb down college to, you know, make it...
Oh, and we've seen that.
Sure, make it work for the least of us instead of the best of us.
You know, and I'm gonna quote, sort of paraphrase something that Mike Rowe said, and I'll tell you what an intelligent guy. I
he
love
is.
That guy.
I do too. Yeah.
Could listen to him all day long. And he made some very, very salient points. And he says, like, for instance, like a liberal arts degree, do you realize, and I know it's true, do you realize that 98% of everything that you would learn in college to get a Bachelor of Arts degree, you can get on your smartphone for free?
That's exactly right.
And it is right. And so what are people ultimately paying for? They're paying for that piece of paper. Because when you and I look into newspapers or listen to the radio, watch television, and they come up with these ridiculous courses that they make these kids take, right, and pay good money for, which is their parents paying good money, it is the epitome of ridiculousness and nonsense.
You know what else it makes me wonder, Ron? It makes me wonder, because our colleges are so far to the left anymore, and we have, I think that the last time that you and I had a conversation about this, only 39% of colleges had even one conservative professor in the college in the entire country.
We talked about that. You're exactly right.
So would this be another way to get more kids into college and brainwash them into this socialist mindset that's happening within our colleges now? Because the college students are the ones who are promoting this whole socialist thing because they think they get something for free.
Well, just wait a minute. Let's go way before that. I actually see this taking place at the elementary school level.
Oh, it absolutely
okay?
is.
Okay, and we've talked about this before. They do not teach civics at the elementary, at the middle school, and at the high school level. They don't teach it anymore. And the history that they teach is inaccurate, it's inclusive, and it's revisionist. And that's why when, you know, the people you know, on these various television programs. Fox News used to do it with Jesse Waters all the time, with Waters World. You would go out and you'd interview people on the street and ask them a basic question about civics, which is, you know, government, how does government run, what's democracy, what's a republic, you know, what's communism, what's socialism, what's Marxism, what's Nazism, you know, what's fascism. They haven't a clue of what these people are talking about.
No, they don't have a clue. And it's a shame. And in fact, I have a very good friend who works in a school district, and the history books that just came out now, they took the Civil War out, but they put LGBTQ in.
Why would they do that? See, that's the inclusivity part of revisionist
history.
But
it removes our history.
Of course. And what an amazing bit of information of historical significance is our Civil War, and what created the circumstances that led to the separation of the North and South. What were they fighting about? What weren't they fighting about? You know, how big of a deal was slavery in the formation of the separation, you know, the cause and effects of the separations of the North and South? I think people would be extremely surprised that slavery at that time, was it important? Yes, but it was way down the scale. There were other things far more important to the South and Southerners about their economy, their trade, what the North was doing to them, because the North was the industrial and the South was the agricultural. You know, all of that. People would be amazed if they really studied the truth of the Civil War.
Well, and it's so, so important. And here's another example. The University of Kansas has put in a class that is on angry white men. And it's about the angry white male in American Britain since the 1950s, exploring the deeper sources of that emotional state while evaluating recent manifestations of male anger. I mean, this is a class that you want to take. Even the students at the school are saying, I don't even know why they have this class. But hey, you know, if I get some credit, whatever.
You know what I would teach in place of that stupid class? Something that these kids really need, and that is a class on maturity and de-escalation and anger management and entitlement. That's what these kids need.
Well, that would be a class, you're absolutely right, that they could actually use in their life, especially the entitlement portion.
Well, getting away, you know, getting along with other people, teaching tolerance, teaching how to de-escalate themselves, de-escalate other people, you know, talking about anger, you know, again, going back to intolerance. Look at all the anger that we see with these young people.
But the anger, Ron, you know, you just mentioned a big word, intolerance. Where is the intolerance that the right is accused of all the time? It is not the right that's intolerant.
Oh, no.
Left that's intolerant.
Absolutely.
And those are the people that are teaching our students. So what we really, really need is we need more conservative teachers to balance this out, to give kids a better perspective. Because what happens is they come out of school all skewed. But along those lines, I also want to mention, because Mike Rowe, I'm looking forward to reading his book, because he really validates the trades in this country. And he thinks that the vocations, like plumbing, like welding,
shop and
all those,
exactly, yeah, car shop, auto shop,
extremely important, and I totally agree. And by the way, all of those professions, and many, many more, make very, very good livings.
Right. And you know what? And I've said this before, you know, when I was going through, you know, high school at the time, I thought I wanted to be a doctor at the time. And so I was taking a lot of, you know, pre-med stuff, right? I was taking the sciences. And when I look back at it, and I'm very happy about my career, you know, but, and I did get to go to medical school and everything. But the thing that I regret, and you'll laugh about because you bust my britches all the time on it, is that I can't even, you know, hammer a nail into a wall without hurting myself or others, you know. And I really wish that I would have taken wood shop, that I would have learned how to fix a car, that I would have learned, you know, some basic plumbing skills and things like that, because you and I end up paying thousands of dollars to these people that did the right thing and went to the trades.
Well, they do. And, you know, when I was in school, I was an honor student. And at my school, I went to Catholic school. At my school, if you were an honor student, you could not take the things like home ec and typing.
Really?
And things like that.
That's interesting.
So you had to take more, you had to take more things like psychology and different things like that. You take more, you know, more brainy type things rather than things that I wish today. I actually enrolled in the typing school at that point. I wanted to take typing. And they pulled me out of that class and they made me take a higher end psych class. To this day, I cannot type.
Boy, I can tell you that. Now listen, Linda, this is something that you don't know about Dr. Ron, but when I was in high school, I needed an elective, a 2-unit elective, and I took typing. And you know what was cool about typing?
You don't type any better than me, Dr. Ron.
Oh, I sure do. I'm telling you what. But I'm telling you, the motivator in that class, I was the only guy in that class.
Oh. Yeah, so you didn't want to get shown up, right?
No, I just wanted to date girls.
Oh. Well, I didn't have that privilege. So anyway, but yes, I do wish that there was things that I would have taken that would have made my life better. And you know, the other class, I'll tell you what, put a doggone class in high school or in the beginning of college of how to balance your checkbook.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. That's exactly right. You know, how to manage your money. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So how about our next cup of coffee?
Okay.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Well, thanks for making a nice cup of hot decaf, because it's getting kind of late in the evening and I don't want to stay up all night. Hey, did you see the fire at the Cathedral de Notre Dame?
Yes, what a tragedy. 800 and some years of history there.
Incredible. And, of course, you know, we don't know yet how that started. I know they were doing some reconstruction inside there. But what I thought was fascinating, they put out on the news as to why the firefighters were stymied in battling that fire. And it turns out that hundreds of years ago, when they built that church and that famous, you know, steeple and the roof of that, they did not want the wood to rot, you know, from the rainwater, mm-hmm. you know, from rain. And so instead of putting, you know, shingles or tile or something like that on the steeple and on the roof, they put lead. So they put sheets of lead there. And so when the firefighters got there and they were throwing, you know, water up on that steeple, all the water was just running off, okay, because the fire was inside the wood from inside the steeple and inside the church and burning it from the inside out.
And there was tons of scaffolding that was wood, too, that would catch fire. So that was... Yeah, that was a horrible, horrible scene. And
you know, they may have to tear the entire church down.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, if you remember the pictures of it, you know, you and I have never been there, but we've seen a lot of pictures of mm-hmm. it. And I think they have something called the outside, you know, that holds up the walls, is called a reverse cantilever system. And so now, because of the heat and all the windows, the stained glass windows they lost, and, you know, all the heat, of course, makes everything brittle.
Artwork
it can't, the reverse cantilever system can no longer support the walls.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right.
Okay.
I just thought that was just, you know, such a tragedy, but
it's
fascinating
tragedy
at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought? And then the firefighters obviously couldn't have gone in there because the
lead
fire
poisoning
was raging
so
much. And actually the steeple did fall right into the body of the church there.
Correct.
So,
well, you've got the molten lead, don't forget.
Yeah.
You've got the fumes, the lead fumes.
Yep.
I mean, you could die just from that, for God's sakes, you know. So
this was a tragedy.
Anyway, it was a tragedy. And you know what? How about Tiger Woods? What do you think?
You know, I was so happy to see him win the Masters. He is a true, you know, hero in my eyes, that with all of his challenges that he's had, and most of them made by himself,
that's
let's be
correct.
Honest.
The divorce, the cheating,
sure,
all of that.
All of that. But, you know, he, and 40 some, is it
42?
Four,
well, he's 42 years old.
No, he's 43 years old, but he had some 40 surgeries and 4 back surgeries.
And a number of knee surgeries.
And he just reinvented himself, and he worked hard, and he did it. And I think that that's just absolutely fascinating.
Well, it's also amazing, and it speaks to the human condition and not taking no for an answer. And I love about what he did. He reminds his attitude reminds me of us. You know, don't let anything put you down. Get up and keep fighting. Go under it, go over it, go around it, go through it. But if you want something, you need to be tenacious. And, you know, we were over at the kids' house when the Masters, the last few holes of the Masters were being played. And I watched him miss that first putt, right?
Yeah.
And I went, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And then sink that second one, and that was it. And it was, what was cute was his 10-year-old kid came running up and gave him just a huge hug and wouldn't leave his side.
Yeah, and his caddy has stuck with him through thick and thin, despite everybody telling him to go play for somebody else.
I did not know that.
He has stuck through him, and he gave him some advice, and I wish I could remember the exact words, but it was something along the lines before he started was to relax, but be intense. And that advice really carried Tiger through that entire tournament. It was like, don't get tensed up and stressed out. Stay relaxed, but keep the intensity up, right?
Be tenacious, keep the intensity up.
That's exactly what he did. He did not let down, and when something, you know, didn't happen exactly right, he just kept going. So anyway, I wanted to mention, because we were talking about the schools and things like that, I want to mention that I have an article out.
I know you do.
Called Letter to Gen X, Y, and Z. And it's probably headed more towards the Y generation, which is the millennials, but it really encompasses all the generations. And there was a situation that came up with an acquaintance of ours, and it made me really think, Ron. And what it made me think of was this question with millennials. If you knew that between high school and 40 years old, you would have a life-changing event. It could be a good one. You might win the lottery. Or it could be a really bad one. You could get in a car accident. You could get ill. Your folks could pass away. You could pass away. But something, some life-changing event. What would you change today, knowing that? And
that's a great philosophical question.
Yeah, and it kind of stuck in my mind for a few days, and the reason it did, Ron, is because what I see, not all, but many of these generations, beyond the baby boomer generations, they waste their time getting to their life, right? They don't get on with life. They somehow are kind of hanging around, living in their parents' house, working at whatever menial, you know, job that they work at, waiting for life to hit them in the face, waiting for lightning to strike, waiting for something to happen, waiting for I don't know what. But life doesn't work that way. And I just felt a passion to write about that and say, you know what? Come on. Life is short. You don't know when your time is. Don't know what you're going to have. You need to be planting seeds for tomorrow now. You need to be just gorging on the candy store of life now and getting everything that you can out of it. And by the way, giving everything that you can back to it, because that actually is how you get things out of life, is by giving to others. So whatever you give comes back tenfold. It's really, really on my mind a lot that as I see these kids not engaging in life and preparing for their future, and I think, where are you going to be at 40? And what if you get in that car accident at 40? What if, you know, nobody knows. So life is not about sitting around and waiting.
You know, I've often said that you need to get out and take on life and not let life hit you in the face. And that's what I see. And I see some kids that are pretty frustrated, and you know, we know a couple of them, and they are stuck in a rut, and they won't take a chance. They won't take a risk. And you're famous for saying to not only our kids, but other kids out there and people you know, what would be absolutely the worst if you failed? Right? If you, because that's the fear of failure, right? That's right. The stuck in a rut. Oh, I'm so comfortable. I don't really like my life now, but I'm comfortable with my life, but I'm scared about going out there and failing. And you come up and you say, look, let's say you fail. What is the absolute worst that could happen to you if you failed? And then you see that sort of deer in the headlights look.
Well, you're just back to where you were the day before.
Exactly. So what has changed?
Nothing has changed. And by the way, I mean, another thing that I always say, which is so funny because our daughter-in-law just told me that she talked about this in a meeting at her work, and she gave me credit. I said, oh, you shouldn't have given me credit. You should have just taken the credit.
You made it up yourself.
but I mean, life is a variety of endless road directions. And if you picture yourself in your car traveling across the country, you can go on any number of roads. And if you take a road and it's a dead end, or you don't like the road and it's not scenic, make a U-turn and go another way. All of life is like that. We all have to make U-turns in life. You've got to start the trip.
Exactly. You know, there's so many different analogies. I mean, you can't hit a home run unless you get up to bat, right? But you're exactly right. Again, what's the worst thing that could happen? You turn around and you go in a different direction. But, you know, it's like the Cowboys on PBR, right? They get on a bull. They got an 8-second ride. They're really planning on making that ride. They really want to work towards making that ride. And they get bucked off in a second and a half or something, especially on one of our bulls.
Well, what do? They do it right again.
They dust themselves. You see them do it. You see them do it 100 times a season, more than 100 times a season. They dust themselves off. They get back up. They limp back over to the, over to the chutes, and they just wait for another opportunity to go do it
again.
Well,
and hopefully the same time they're trying to figure out what they could have done differently, which is, you know, I mean, life is just a series of events of learning, because you never stop learning through life. But if you don't start, for heaven's sakes, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. And life really is about failures and learning from your failures. And I think, the famous movie actor who I really love, Dwayne Johnson, said that as much. You know, you get knocked down, you got to get right back up and go for it again and keep doing it. And you will learn more from your failures than you will from your successes.
Yeah. And one more little thing is that, you know, your yesterday is in the history books. There's nothing you can do about it. It's gone. It's in the history books. So you can learn from it. You can do whatever you want with it in your mind, but it's gone. Tomorrow is a gift package still yet to be opened, and you don't get to peek at it. But today is for living. And I need and want to see this generation just engage in life and be living, not living with their parents, not working in menial jobs when they have the smarts to do something else because they're afraid to make a move or they're expecting somebody to make it for them.
Dr. Linda, those are words to live
I'm
by.
I'm not a doctor, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn once, right?
Okay.
As you would say. Well, as long as we're on the subject of inspiration, you know, I have some inspiration for women. And there is an article in Inc. magazine, and oh, because I'm on the Inc. list, Ron.
And Inc. is spelled I-N-C, as in incorporated, right? Not I-N-K.
That is written by Amy Morin. And she wrote an article called Mentally Strong Women Refuse to Do These 13 Things. And I read this article and I thought, wow, you know, this is a powerful, powerful article for women. So if you are a woman out there, you know, perk your ears up because I think that this is really interesting. So again, things that strong women don't do. The first thing they don't do is they don't compare themselves with other people. So they only care about, they compete with themselves and not with others, right? They don't need to be doing the whole, you know, what's the neighbor thing
they call it? The Joneses?
Yeah.
Keeping up with the Joneses? Okay.
Yeah. They focus on their own goals and not other people's goals. They don't insist on perfection because they know that perfection doesn't exist.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just causes extra stress. You take your imperfections and you don't establish bars that are so high that you can't possibly reach them. They don't see vulnerability as a weakness. So if somebody is vulnerable, actually, I see that as a strength because to allow yourself to be vulnerable is, that's hugely hard for me. And
oh, I know it is.
Yeah. And
I know
and
you.
that is a strength.
You're
my,
a stud,
in
Linda.
My mind. No, it's a strength to admit your weaknesses and admit that you don't have all the answers all the time.
Well, I think that part is very important.
Yeah. They don't let self-doubt stop them from reaching their goals. So you're allowed to have self-doubt. Everybody should have some self-doubt. But when you decide that you're heading for that goal, then you've got to overcome that self-doubt.
Right. Don't let self-doubt become your crutch in life.
Exactly. They don't overthink everything. You know, I mean, that's a kind of a peeve of mine. I don't like overthinking things because sometimes that leads to stagnation. You need to think about it, worry about the things that could happen, could not happen, and move forward.
And you know what? That goes back over to what we were just talking about earlier. Don't get in that rut and put so many obstructions in front of you about failure. I could fail this way. I could fail that way. I could fail this way. How about looking at it this way? How could I succeed? And what would it be like to succeed?
Right. And take productive action in that direction rather than sitting there stagnating.
Agreed.
Fence sitting is not my thing. They don't shy away from tough challenges. So if there's a tough challenge or an uncomfortable conversation, you know, it's better to face that straight on than to run away from
Definitely not you, Linda.
No.
Talking while married.
Yep. Well, you have to face your fears. And even if it's one small step at a time, you have to face your fears or they're going to control you.
I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
They don't fear breaking the rules. That's me. I don't fear breaking the rules. Many girls are brought up to be so polite and to be taught not to break the rules. We need to break some rules because it's the rule breakers that change the world.
Well, you've broken quite a few glass ceilings, come to speak of it, too, you know, in the corporate world and in the business world. So that's absolutely great advice to give out.
And the reason I did, Ron, is because I didn't believe that they were there.
And I know you've said that before in a couple of speeches before crowds. I think that's fantastic.
Yep. They don't put others down to lift themselves up. People that do that, that just makes me crazy.
Is that a woman thing?
No, definitely not. That's just a person thing.
Okay.
Men do that as well. They tell you'll never amount to anything. They tell you that you can't get this or that done. You don't have the potential. No. You don't put others down to lift yourself up. You have to believe in yourself and you know your own potential. You don't need somebody else to tell you what it is, right? They don't blame themselves when bad things happen. That's a hard one. It's hard not to blame yourself. You can admit, though, that you made a mistake or you made a bad choice, because guess what? We all do, right? Yeah, we all do in life.
Absolutely.
So you don't take it to heart and say, I'm a bad person. They don't stay silent. There's a lot of women that stay very silent in meetings, and they think it's not their place to speak out. And I have to say, I have never had that problem. So speak up. And what this author says is find your authentic voice and let it be heard. And I love that. They don't hesitate to reinvent themselves. And I love that too, because it's like taking that wrong road and then changing directions. You can reinvent yourselves 1,000 different ways and 1,000 different times. And you should, right?
Well, especially in business, you've got to rebrand. And I think that's not just for women. That's for anybody.
Sure. And for all of us, as we get older at different points in our life, our priorities change. So we reinvent ourselves. And they don't fear owning their success. So if you succeed, you own it and you don't make excuses for it.
Well, I'll tell you what, spoken from a master, all right? Because you've just done an amazing job. And you know what's interesting about this? And when, you know, you brought this to me, you didn't discuss any of these things with me because you wanted it to be nice and spontaneous as it was. And I have to tell you that this woman that wrote this article did everybody a huge favor. And I'm glad to know that you didn't see yourself in any of these problems, because to me, you're an extremely successful and the strongest woman I've ever met.
Oh, thank
all
you.
All right. Speaking of that, can you carry me to bed?
No, that I can't do. Not that strong. You'll have to reinvent yourself and walk.
Well, all right. Well, let's head in that direction.
Okay.